still waiting, waiting, waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Here's a flare. What?
That's the wrong man.
WCW completely wiping its hands of this event.
This is a public service announcement. This is only a test. Emergency evacuation protest.
Welcome everybody to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And my God, is this going to be a horrible, horrible show to review. Uncensored 1995, Wei, from Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yeah. How did you choose this pay-per-view?
I only chose it because so many people have requested it. And I'm already going to say ahead of time, I'm going to give this a 0 out of 10.
Oh, my God.
I hated this show.
That's a given.
It took me two sittings just to get through the Jim Duggan Ming match. I had to stop midway through the match.
Nice.
It has never been... In the year and a half we have done this, as bad as some of the events are, I at least have gotten through them without pain. This one was just like, I can't believe I'm still not done this show. Mm-hmm. I did not finish this review until this morning when you came in. I still had 45 minutes to watch of it. I've never left it till the morning of to finish.
Yeah.
I just could not get through this.
This show is absolute shit. I've never heard of it. To be honest with you.
Really?
No, I never
I used
heard
to have
bad.
This. When I was a kid, I found this at a Blockbuster bin for like $5 and
wow.
bought it.
Wow.
But
John.
I broke the tape, and I don't have it anymore.
You...
I think I watched it and just threw it away.
I can't believe you actually paid for this. You own a physical copy. You really amaze me, because there must be something about your wiring inside your head that made you... see Uncensored 1995 at a store and decide, I'm going to spend my money, my actual physical money that I can use to buy anything in the world. I'm going to spend that money on this videotape, Uncensored 1995.
Well, in truth, I would have been like 11 years old and I probably got my parents to buy it for me for $4.99.
How could you do that to
I know,
your parents?
I know. It's a horrible thing. But how's your week been, Wei?
My week's been okay.
What did you think of the Super Bowl tonight?
Whoa, what a game.
Did you win the pool?
I don't know. I think so.
I didn't even bother watching it.
No?
Football sucks.
I just watch the commercials usually. Wow, some amazing commercials.
Yes, I especially like the one with Eminem. It was worth $1 million to get him in that ad.
Wow, was that who that was?
Yep, that was Eminem.
What did you think of Slash and Usher? Performing at the halftime show.
Very odd pairing. Mm-hmm. Very, very odd pairing. But I guess that's what you get when you combine shit like that.
I thought it was spectacular.
I just saw a clip on YouTube. I didn't even bother with the game.
Really?
Who cares?
They couldn't have blended it together better.
But UFC last night, was a good show, man. Wow.
Talk about
that main
drama.
Event finish was phenomenal.
I couldn't believe it. You know what? I pissed myself.
You owe me $10 for the Bader Jones fight.
Yes, because you were right.
And you were wrong.
All right, here you go.
There you go.
$10. This is ridiculous. This has gone on way too long.
Let's get into Uncensored, everybody, because I know that's what everyone has downloaded this show for free wants to hear about. March 19th of 1995, everybody.
Whoa, this was just a few days after our birthdays.
You're right. We would have turned 11.
Is that right?
11. 95 would be 11.
Oh, yeah.
And then I did not watch WCW at this time, nor... I don't think we could watch WCW this time unless you
had TBS.
I didn't get TBS.
You didn't?
No, I didn't get it till like years later. So I didn't really have an opportunity to watch any WCW, even if I think they might have had. They used to have the Power Hour, which would air on Saturday mornings, but I think that was done by this point.
What channel? Wasn't that on TBS?
No, that would have... Power Hour, I seem to remember being on like CH or something. Yeah. I really can't remember that well. But follow WCW at this time, if you didn't have TBS, you were kind of like just out of luck.
Nitro was on, wasn't it?
No, Nitro wasn't on by this
time.
It started in September of 95.
Oh.
And their main show at this point was Saturday night,
mm-hmm.
which is amazing when you think about it, you know?
Yeah, what a piece of crap.
Well, it was a traditional time slot for wrestling fans.
Yeah. I can't imagine that.
You never watched WCW, did you, at this point?
Yeah, off and on.
Really?
But I never really followed any storylines, I don't think.
I remember every so often I would like see the pay-per-view commercials, and I was always just astounded at the WWF guys and figuring out, oh, that's where he went.
Yes,
or
that's right.
When guys would show up in the WWF from WCW.
That was always my favorite.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden, Johnny B. Badd is in the WWF.
And why aren't they calling him Johnny?
I don't know.
Why does he have this alternate name?
Yeah, where's his confetti gun?
I relied on that time on when I was like 10 of calling Starphone for news tips from Norm DaCosta.
Was that who it
Norm was? DaCosta was like the soccer reporter for the Toronto Star, and he did wrestling reports on Starphone.
Yeah.
And he did like he had like this accent. And
Starphone, for people who don't know, is like this... the Toronto Star is a local paper here in Toronto, and they also made this star, like this telephone
hotline. Just an information
hotline,
yeah.
And you can call in a specific number for traffic updates or entertainment updates or video game updates even, and they had a wrestling section that the Law for a short time was a part
of. Yes. And it was – I never understood the – I guess the financial – logic behind this, because it was a free service.
I don't understand the financial logic over what are we doing? Yeah. This is free.
Yeah.
Are we making any money off of this?
Yeah, that's true. We're just a continuation of Starphone,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly.
So,
Jolton Joe.
Jolton Joe was the one who succeeded Norm DaCosta.
That's who we should interview. That's who we should have a guest on. Jolton Joe.
Yeah, maybe we can get Joe on the show to talk about Starphone.
What do you think he's doing? I would love to hear an update from anybody regarding Jolton Joe.
We'll find out. So let's get into Uncensored, everybody. How did we get off on that tangent there? On WCW and how hard it was to follow this company. There's an opening video for Uncensored, and it like three different times it features a black and white picture with like the outline for a camcorder recording them saying, "Get the camera out of my face. we're gonna go where cameras have never gone before tonight."
How else are you gonna know if something's recording?
I guess. Your announcers tonight are Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan, with a very young Mike Tenay doing backstage interviews.
Well, he's like 40 at this time.
Young by today's standards, being 16 years
older. He looks
older.
Exactly the same, actually.
He's aged a little.
A little. He's always looked old.
I guess so. Heenan says that this is the biggest week in sports. Michael Jordan is back in the NBA. Mike Tyson's out of prison. And it's Uncensored.
Yeah, those three things. Yep. We all remember that weekend.
Yep.
In that little opening video, I forgot to mention, on the bottom, there's like a little lower third that said card subject to change. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, that's on most...
Well, hold on, but I would figure that if you're putting this video at the beginning of the actual broadcast, you would have enough time to change that video by now, so that you wouldn't have to list card subject to change at the bottom of it.
I'm sure they didn't.
They didn't have time.
They wouldn't have had enough time, okay. So they just covered themselves. They go to a promo with Hulk Hogan, who has gone to the dark side. And he has brought in the Renegade, and we just see a jacked up dude posing with dry ice being shot up.
This was Hulk Hogan talking to the camera, and the camera would zoom out, and in the corner of the back of the room is this figure that looks mysteriously like the Ultimate Warrior. Looks just like him.
Well, I don't know how people would confuse the two. Going into this pay-per-view, they promised The ultimate surprise. That's what they billed it as. The yes. ultimate surprise is mm-hmm. coming to Uncensored.
Yes.
Horrible.
Oh, man.
Then we cut to our first match in the back of an 18-wheeler truck way. Oh. It is Dustin Rhodes against the Blacktop Bully in a King of the Road match.
What exactly is a King of the Road match?
I watched this and I still don't know, way. Apparently these two guys had to fight in the back of this 18-wheeler, surrounded by hay and these sections of the truck that they could climb into. And you had to get to the front and blow a horn. There was a horn attached to the top near the front of the truck, and you had to blow that horn.
Yeah.
And everyone could hear this horn and therefore signify the winner.
Yeah, well, it's just like a ladder match, except instead of grabbing the belt, honking a horn.
It's just like a ladder match, except this one was a bad idea. Other than that, they're all the similar.
I just couldn't believe this was actually turned into a real thing. Somebody decided, we're going to make guys wrestle on the back of a moving truck.
It's Uncensored!
They shot this ahead of time. This was not done live because this would have been a terrible idea to do live.
It was a terrible idea to do regardless.
They were followed by the WCW helicopter.
They spared no expense doing this thing. They had like 3-4 camera crews in there. One of them in a chopper, like you mentioned. They hired a chopper for this flatbed truck match.
We see Rhodes hit a pile driver in the truck. He then picks up a bale of hay and delivers an unprotected hay shot to the head of Bully.
Oh, man.
Shivani starts going over the strategy of trying to wear down your opponent here in this truck. Dustin loses his balance and takes his first bump of the match when the driver takes a sharp turn.
That was a big point of suspense. I mean, this, you couldn't tell what was happening here because, first of all, they didn't have any room to move around. The two guys didn't have any room to work. Secondly, they would try to take bumps, but they would all just land on hay, so nothing looked like it hurt at all.
Yes, it was all surrounded by hay, so it was really hard to take any of these bumps as meaning anything. Driver then slows down, gets to a stop sign, and Bully ends up flipping off of the fence to the ground as a result of this sudden stop. Then they drive through a trailer park. WCW has never looked more major league than this overhead shot of two men fighting in the back of a truck as they drive through a trailer park.
Yes.
Rhodes then picks up a trough and hits Bully in the head with it. Then they come to a stop sign, and I swear to God, Shivani says that they're being stopped by a church bus. Then the truck continues driving, and it's now in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
They are in traffic. They did not have these roads cordoned off for them.
They had two police escorts at the beginning and the front. And then, yes, they did have to stop for a bus.
They keep going to aerial shots as Bully throws a water container at Rhodes. They fight near the horn. Bully knocks down Rhodes off of the lift, goes to the ground, and the Blacktop Bully blows the horn. Now, what was more entertaining than all of this is the fact that both men were fired after this match, not because of this performance, but because both men bladed. And for the life of you, I could not see any blood here.
Me neither.
And yet these two were fired as a result of this.
I couldn't see anything. You said they tossed all that water. I couldn't tell what they were tossing each other with.
This is one of those gimmick matches where whoever comes up with this says, yeah, this has never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
And logic says, yeah, there's a reason it's never been done before.
It's Uncensored!
I guarantee you Vince Russo has not seen this show because if he did, he'd like just lose it. He'd have so many ideas.
Why didn't
out of
I
this.
Think of that? Yeah.
The King of the Road match.
It's just, you're right. It's very interesting trying to think of the mindset of these people who created this thing and try to think how they decided that this wouldn't be a good idea.
And why would this start off the show? Like, what a way
know.
To kill the crowd.
Yeah.
This was 15 minutes
15
of
minutes.
Watching a helicopter shot and
a
van chasing them.
15 minutes of a videotape. Mm-hmm. Let's start off the show with this 15-minute-long video that we're going to watch on the screen and commentate live.
And Shivani and Heenan were just, especially Heenan on this show, it was just like, man, the difference between WWF Heenan and WCW Heenan is just night and day.
Sure.
It's just like punchlines that he's looking for. That's all he does on these shows.
Well, sure, he was given a lot less direction at this time.
Oh, I have no doubt. Then we get Pyro to officially start the show, Way.
I thought the Pyro was to celebrate the end of the King of the Road match.
Congratulations to the Blacktop Bully. You're fired. Mike Tenay is backstage with the Stud Stable, Arn Anderson, Ming, and Colonel Robert Parker, and they congratulate Bully, who is part of their group as well.
Oh, God.
These three people could not be more contrasting personalities, and you can throw in the Blacktop Bully as well. Like, why would these four even be part of a group together?
It's Arn just Anderson.
Arn Anderson, Colonel Robert Parker, and Ming. Just these ridiculous gimmicks, and then Arn Anderson, the, like, shooter wrestler.
Yeah. Arn cuts a promo that just completely swings the show 180 degrees around.
Yes.
I mean, as ridiculous as that first match was, Arn cuts a promo that gets me right back into pro wrestling.
He says that Johnny B. Badd thought with his heart and not his head when they put together this boxer versus wrestler match for later tonight. I just noted here, Anderson, a great promo, and Parker is not a good promo at all. Mm. He was a horrible character.
Parker is like in your improv class, I'm sure when you role play, someone's like, okay, play the stereotypical redneck. And that's
His managerial career
that
in
was
WCW.
His life. Yes.
And then he parlayed that into a run as Tennessee Lee in WWF.
Alright.
Parker says that Ming is going to show Jim Duggan 9 versions of martial arts tonight. 9 versions, Way, so let's keep count. Okay. We then get a video package for Ming and Jim Duggan with our favorite theme song, Dean Malenko's, which is used as the music for this video package.
I didn't know that.
This has been used multiple times.
With the horses?
No. I think Rey Mysterio used it as well at one point.
Okay.
But Dean Malenko is the one I always remember it for. Way, as someone that works like with a high emphasis on like a graphical level, what were your thoughts on the graphics for Uncensored?
Well, they were going for the Uncensored
These
style.
These were shit. It was like the font was like the ransom note.
Yeah, ransom note thing.
And then and you had these cutouts of the wrestlers with like this static behind them. Yeah. I just thought it looked so cheesy.
Well, this was the mid-90s. And like going back to what we were saying a few weeks or a couple months back, I felt like it wasn't until the late 90s that graphics everywhere sort of took a real step beyond this shit.
So we've got Jim Duggan against Ming in a martial arts match.
And Ming is wearing like a duvet cover over his head. That's what it looks like.
And we are introduced to guest referee Sonny Ono, who is playing like a legitimate Japanese martial arts expert here.
Kazuo Sonny Ono is who he played. And he doesn't even speak English.
Nope. Idea for the referee here.
He was just shouting Japanese at Jim Duggan, so he's come a long way since then.
Duggan came down with a torn shirt, jeans, and tape all around himself. And we start off this with Duggan refusing to bow to Ono. Ono gets on his case, and Duggan says, "Get off my back!" And the martial arts fight starts with punches from Jim Duggan. Duggan then shows us the martial art of pulling your boot off and hitting him in the head, which is what he did to Ming. But of course, because Ming is a
martial artist.
Well, Samoan. He doesn't feel pain in his head.
Yes.
The age-old stereotype there. Then we see Ming with the first of many, many, many nerve holds, which is broken off by Duggan's boot.
What martial art would you call that? Nerve hold. Krav Maga? Do they do that?
I don't know. It was it definitely put some
Wing
people...
Chun?
It put 6,000 people to sleep in the audience, so it must be effective. We get another nerve hold from Ming, and this time Duggan powers back by tearing his own shirt off. Duggan was like barely mobile here, and 16 years later, he's still working like indie dates, which is scary. I thought he was so lazy in this match. Like, just...
That's just look, his style.
His bumping looked terrible. It was just like, this guy doesn't give a fuck. And I didn't give a fuck. I thought this match was just terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. Mm. And not even the worst match on the show. It was just slow motion here. More nerve holds by Ming. Duggan knocks himself out by headbutting Ming. Ha, ha, ha. Duggan then makes a comeback with shots into the turnbuckle. Then he hits a three-point clothesline that is no-sold by Ming. Then Colonel Parker gets onto the apron. Sonny Ono is distracting Duggan. And basically, Duggan is being held by Parker and Ono. And Ming hits his savate kick to the head and gets the pin. And I just wrote, how is this a martial arts match?
There was nothing different about this match than any other pro wrestling match. They went for pinfalls. Duggan executed no semblance of any type of martial arts. Not even wrestling. Didn't go for
We didn't
a
even
take
get end. A karate chop, which I thought we would get from this crew in 1995.
You got nothing.
No broken boards.
Off to a terrible, terrible start.
Which match? Well, let's do it at the end, the worst match, because that's going to be a closely contested finish. We then go to a video for the Johnny B. Badd Arn Anderson feud. And then Johnny B. Badd is interviewed by Mike Tenay with his manager, trainer, Rock Finnegan. And yeah. Johnny B. Badd has a left hand that he likes to call Dreamland.
Mm.
He's going to send Arn Anderson into Dreamland.
Who are some notable boxers trained by Rock Finnegan?
I have no clue. Did you look up any of them?
I tried to.
Does Rock Finnegan not exist on paper?
I don't think so.
This was Rock, R-O-C,
mm-hmm.
not with a K.
Yeah. He was an actor, I think.
Then we go to a promo from Arn Anderson, and I'm not kidding. This was the highlight of the show for me. Arn Anderson got out of a Jeep.
Oh, yeah.
And he just cuts a promo about being a badass and keeping the television title. And this man came across as the most legitimate wrestler on the show.
Yes.
He talked about getting out of this Jeep. He's going to get back in and manhandle those mountains up there. There was no bullshit about this guy at all.
Oh.
I thought this was the best thing on the entire show.
I completely agree with you. This was 2 minutes of Arn Anderson getting out of an SUV and telling you why he's the shit. And yeah. That's it.
I'm going to kick Johnny B. Badd's ass. That's all he needed to do. It was great. So that leads us to our boxer versus wrestler match. Apparently a non-title match, despite Anderson being the television champion.
Well, it's unsanctioned. You can't put the title up.
Well, that would have been nice if he didn't just cut a promo stating that I'm going to keep my television title. But who cares? They say that this boxer versus wrestler match can end in a pin, submission, or a 10 count. Greatly sure. Favoring the wrestler, I think.
Yes.
Early on, Johnny B. Badd gets the advantage with punches in the corner, sends Anderson to the floor. Anderson just stands with him rather than shooting for a takedown.
Mark Merrill is wearing gloves, by the way.
Stupid strategy here.
He's wearing boxing gloves.
You're really limiting yourself here in a boxer versus wrestler match where the wrestler can just take you down and you've got gloves. What would happen if you get put on your back? You're fucked.
He punches way up.
I guess. I gave round one to Johnny B. Badd pretty clearly.
Did you? 10-9?
Yeah. It would have been... Well, you know, I thought there was a... We apparently didn't get the three knockdown rule that Shivani explained, because Arn Anderson would get knocked down 4 times in round two, and that should generally lead to a point deduction for each knockdown. Shivani then brings up Antonio Inoki's strategy against Muhammad Ali in 1976 by getting on his back and attacking the legs of the boxer. We did not see that from Arn Anderson, and thankfully we didn't see any highlights of that match because that was a pretty terrible match itself. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
I've seen bits and pieces, but I've never been able to sit through the whole thing because everyone tells me it's like the worst thing you'll ever see.
Yeah,
15 rounds of nothing.
Maybe we'll review that one day.
I don't think anyone wants us to. Colonel Parker tells him at the end of the first round to take his legs out from under him. And then Badd starts off round two with a knockdown. Then gets knocked down another 2 times, and this is where Shivani brings up that there's no 3 knockdown rule, because in a traditional boxing match, that would signal the end of a fight, 3 knockdowns.
Are there any rules?
In this match? Well, it's unsanctioned, way, so apparently not, even though they say it can end in a pin, submission, or 10 count, and we have a referee. So Badd wins the second round. Then Anderson attacks and hits his DDT onto Badd during the rest period. Anderson attacks again and throws him over the top rope, and Anderson points out, it's no disqualification. So there's no DQs in this boxing match, apparently.
So while all this happens, the bell rings to signify the start of the round, and the both of them are still outside of the ring.
So then Anderson gets Bad back in the ring, and he sends Johnny B. Bad into the corner, into the stool, back first, as the round continues, and the round ends with Johnny B. Bad thrown to the floor. Colonel Parker stomps on him, and Anderson throws him into the corner at the end. And I'm thinking, okay, thankfully this is over. No, we're going into round four now.
There are 10 rounds.
Oh, I thought it was only three. I thought it was like an MMA fight. Instead, we're going to round four. It's like, Jesus Christ. And Anderson attacks Bad once again before the bell. But this time, Rock Finnegan puts the water bucket onto Anderson's head, and Bad hits him with Dreamland and gets the 10-count victory, but not the title. Just a ridiculous match.
Bad, before the start of this round, took off one of his gloves, channeling Art Jimmerson.
Yes, from UFC 2.
Yes. One.
It was one.
And
this match.
What a match.
This was still the best match thus far.
I agree with you. I actually found this oddly entertaining.
I didn't. Fact,
well, I found it entertaining because they did a very good job of portraying what you would imagine a boxer versus wrestler match to look like.
And at that time period.
Yes.
Maybe.
I gotta say, this was probably a better...
Minus the bucket on the head.
Yeah. Well, it all fell,
And turned foreign objects.
It all turned to shit, after the third round when they suddenly said, okay, we've been following all these rules this whole time, but now there are no rules. And so why should I care about anything anymore? But I still found this better than a lot of the Jarrett double MA exhibition matches that would happen.
I don't know. I found those entertaining. I was more entertained by the Jarrett stuff than this. So then we get a video on Randy Savage, who had just debuted a few months earlier at Starrcade, which we reviewed a year ago. He's with Mike Tenay. This was great. Savage calls Arn Anderson Buckethead, and that Avalanche cannot handle him because he is too cold to hold. Then Savage starts mumbling something, and it's all inaudible. And I swear to God, he ends his promo with, I don't know what I'm saying right now, and he walks off. This would have been a great chance to redo a promo, but they didn't. They just aired this.
That's part of his character.
I don't know what I'm saying right now, as Tenay starts laughing.
He's senile.
So that leads to the exciting Randy Savage versus Avalanche match, everybody. Avalanche, for those unaware, John Tenta, Earthquake. The big spot is Savage holding the rope down as Avalanche sails over the top to the floor, and the fans pop for this. Savage then hit an axe handle from the top to the floor. Back in the ring, Avalanche actually hits a drop kick. And throughout the show, they're making these updates about Jimmy Hart disappearing. And he was supposed to be in Hulk Hogan's corner tonight, but Hogan's going crazy because Jimmy Hart has apparently been kidnapped. Savage is then tossed to the floor and into the barricade and selling. He works for his comeback, but then it gets sat on by Avalanche during a sunset flip attempt. Savage gets out of the way of the Avalanche drop, and then Savage makes a comeback, hits an axe handle to Avalanche on the floor, until a woman, Way, shows up and attacks Savage, but it's not a woman.
No, it's not. It's Ric Flair dressed in drag.
It's uncensored!
And this was only amazing because Flair, in his drag outfit, starts attacking Savage right in front of a fan with a giant sign that reads, "It's still the best thing going today. Woo."
Huh.
That's what his sign read.
Nice.
That was great direction here.
Ric Flair in a woman's dress and a black wig.
Maybe, with eyeliner and nail polish.
Maybe one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. This show has everything. A flatbed truck match, Ric Flair in drag. And so Ric Flair starts chopping Savage while in this dress. And then
we get an Avalanche drop onto Savage until Hogan makes a run into a big reaction. And then right after, the announcers explain there are no DQs because it's
uncensored!
And then the bell rings, and they announce Randy Savage is your winner by disqualification on Uncensored, the unsanctioned show. And Hogan helped Savage to the back with an arm injury.
Avalanche.
This was like literally a minute after the announcers explained there are no DQs. They DQ Avalanche. This is one of the worst shows of all time.
Fuck. It really, yeah. Avalanche celebrates with Flair walking up the ramp, and I don't know why he's celebrating. Flair just cost him the match that he was winning. He was in full control of this until Flair showed up in a dress.
Mike Tenay is with Harlem Heat and Sister Sherry, and they are going to have a Texas Tornado match with the Nasty Boys. Stevie Ray calls Tupelo this country hick town, and Booker says they are going to turn it up to 1,000 Harlem Heat degrees. I was hoping there would be some heat for this match because I didn't see any on the undercard. And clearly they went long here because Sherry's cutting this promo forever. And Mike Tenay just takes the microphone away and they cut off the promo mid-sentence and just go back to Schiavone and Heenan.
Mm-hmm.
This was a completely awkward cutout.
Yeah. It looked like Tenay was an asshole. That's what he
looked like. It looked like this company was like your local indie at a Legion Hall. Then we get a video for
It's uncensored.
It's uncensored. You don't know what's going to happen. But I know what I didn't want to see, and that was this next match. Sting and Big Bubba Rogers. And they document Big Bubba Rogers' big heel turn from when he was the Guardian Angel and turning on Sting and becoming Big Bubba. And Tenay is with Sting. And Sting starts off with, "You're Tenay, right?" And he says, "Tonight is Bubba's end."
Mm-hmm.
Great. So it's Big Bubba Rogers and Sting, which is billed as a super contest.
Whoa. What does that mean?
I don't know. I think it means 14 minutes of absolute gut-wrenching boredom, which is what I experienced. The match starts with Sting biting the finger of Bubba and then stomping on his hat.
He leg dropped that.
Oh, he leg dropped it. He actually took a bump on his hip for this fucking hat. Schiavone refers to Sting as a great scientific wrestler. Giant lie. The first 5 minutes was like a squash match where Sting just beat the shit out of the heel. This was completely backwards. Sting's then selling comes when he tries to leapfrog Bubba in the middle of the ring, but Bubba runs into the penis of Sting. And this leads to Sting selling his left knee.
They're attached.
I wrote, "This is the most boring and basic match ever. Not effective at all." Sting cuts off Bubba with a back body drop.
It was so slow. This and the match before it, it was either Boss Man or Earthquake taking over, and it was the slowest pace.
Bubba is working on the left leg of Sting forever, and this leads to Bobby Heenan saying, "He won't be able to sue Bubba." And Schiavone says, "Why's that, Brain?" "He won't have a leg to stand on." Bubba goes to the top rope, but Sting shakes the ropes. Bubba falls. Sting hits an axe handle on his bad knee. Bubba then has a baseball slide to the floor, but goes to punch Sting. And Sting pulls him into the ring with a sleeper hold. Then a German suplex by Sting. The knee seems to be holding up great. Then we see a splash off the top rope by Sting with the bad knee for a two count. Then Rogers misses a splash into the turnbuckle. Sting goes for a body slam, and finally his leg gives out. Rogers falls down on top of Sting. 1, 2, 3. Silence from the crowd. Big Bubba Rogers defeats Sting. This wasn't the silence that was the same as Bruno Sammartino losing to Ivan Koloff. This was just, thank God, this match is over. And it ends with Rogers looking into the camera saying, "I told you I'd win." This was a horrible match. Just so boring. 14 minutes these fuckers got.
Yeah.
This one match turned me off of wanting to see Sting come in for WrestleMania.
No.
He's 16 years older.
Oh, man.
This was terrible.
This whole show.
I just hated this match.
I'm
sorry.
I feel sick. Like, I feel physically not well just thinking about all this. Just sitting here talking about this show. I feel like I'm starting to sweat. I'm getting a little bit of a headache.
I'm sorry.
All right.
You've got to make a good pick for next week.
Yeah, I'll try. I don't know what else there is.
Once you hit this.
It's all bad.
I know. Well, we don't have to do something bad. Sometimes stumble across something good. Just none on this show. Video preview for Harlem Heat and the Masty Boys. I get annoyed just by this formula. It's like match, video preview, interview, match. Video preview, interview, match.
And that's what they always do.
No, it's like every single... It's just such a formula. It was just like, ugh. And none of these promos were good. Like, all the promos were so lame.
Yeah. It's all shit.
And these were not scripted promos. They were just not good. Stupid comedy and just ridiculous, over-the-top characters. That
these feuds don't matter. The characters don't matter. The matches don't matter.
I stand corrected here. There was one great moment here when Mike Tenay interviewed the Nasty Boys and Brian Knobb said, they're going to defeat Harlem Heat right here in Tucson.
Oh, did he say that?
They were in Tupelo. And they were the baby faces, folks. So don't say he was trying to get over a heel line there. So we've got Harlem Heat against the Nasty Boys in a Texas Tornado match for the tag titles. I don't even know who the champions were, to be honest here.
Who cares?
Okay. Sherry comes out without Harlem Heat. Nasty Boys come out and Harlem Heat attack them from behind from the crowd. So we see a spike pile driver to Knobs early on.
Perhaps this is like, you can look at this like people look at surrealism, like surrealist art. Doesn't have to make sense, but it stands for something else.
Shitty wrestling? Bad pay-per-views? Shows people didn't buy then?
Maybe it's... They were clearly being experimental with this show.
Oh, yeah.
And so maybe they just wanted to test the limits of wrestling.
Okay. This match, for you historians out there, they were in Tupelo, Mississippi, which is the city that hosted the first ever Tupelo concession brawl with Wayne Ferris, the Honky Tonk Man, and Larry Latham against Rick and Robert Gibson. This was for Memphis Wrestling back in 1980, I believe. And it became this famous match, the Tupelo Concession Brawl. So that was the genesis of this match here. A subtle tribute to that match, I believe.
Was it as good as this?
I don't think so. This featured them fighting to the refreshment stand, which was the most ridiculously staged refreshment stand I've ever seen in my life. First of all, it was gated off so that no one was working there, nor were there any fans at this refreshment stand, which spelled out refreshment stand. Knobs threw a drink holder. They wipe out on the concrete. There's mustard splashed on everybody. Led to Heenan's line of, do you have any Grey Poupon?
Yeah.
Just a backdrop for jokes. Everyone's slipping on the floor. It looked like someone was going to die. Knobs is then tossed into the concession stand that collapses. Crowd was somewhat into this, being different at the time. I mean, you didn't get these hardcore matches in WCW. And then Booker T and Jerry Sags are just fighting, and the bell rings. And they announce the Nasty Boys are the winners. The camera was not on them for the finish or anything. And then we finally get a replay of Knobs slamming Stevie Ray, who kicks out at 2, but that was the finish, and they replayed it for us. So, great job, guys, on the directing here for the finish. I don't know who the champions were before or after this match. I assume the Nasty Boys left with the tag titles if they won this. God. But maybe it was a non-title match.
This was just a disaster. Like, it's so embarrassing to watch this as an adult. I can't imagine taking part in its creation.
Well, I made the mistake way of not finishing this at home this week, so this morning I had to watch this match and the strap match at work, and I felt so stupid watching all of this shit.
Yeah.
As people were at work, probably wondering, what the fuck is Pollock watching? Tenay is with Ric Flair and Vader. Vader cuts the most stereotypical 80s promo. Then they pan to Ric Flair, who cuts his one and only promo wearing eyeliner and nail polish, and says he's going to take Hogan out of the sport. This was incredibly weird.
One of the creepiest things you'll ever see is Ric Flair staring into a camera, cutting an angry promo with mascara and nail polish on. It's like, it's an image that will haunt me forever.
Yep. So we've got a background of this feud. They show a clip from Super Brawl 5 where Ric Flair attacked Hogan, put him in the figure four following the Hogan-Vader WCW title match. And then Hogan attacks Vader on Saturday night during a match with the Patriot, attacks him with the strap. And then we see a Hogan promo with Jimmy Hart from a few weeks ago promising the ultimate surprise. And this leads to Hulk Hogan against Vader. Hogan defending the WCW title in a strap match here. They actually brought Michael Buffer into Tupelo, Mississippi. They introduced Vader's new advisor, Ric Flair, replacing Harley Race. And they say Vader is out to avenge the robbery of the decade at Super Brawl. And I looked at my video player here. 30 minutes were left in the show here, and I was just dreading this. Heenan said it's very sad to see Flair in the mental state he is, and blames Hogan. Then we get this shitty Ultimate Warrior ripoff tune. It was like directly based on the Ultimate Warrior's theme song. I don't know how they didn't get sued here, and they actually might have gotten a cease and desist out of this because I recall there being an issue at the time because they were so blatantly leading you to think the Ultimate Warrior was coming at this pay-per-view.
This was the ultimate surprise.
It was. It was also the ultimate bait and switch. So for those of you curious about this new guy, the Renegade, his name was Rick Williams, a former male stripper who started to be trained by Killer Kowalski, and he died in February of 1999 from a suicide. Renegade, early on, grabs the wrist of Ric Flair, who sells the life out of it. This guy, Renegade, looked like he could do nothing. He looked terrible.
Well, he was doing a warrior impression.
Well, congratulations. You accomplished it. And this guy running away with the Scott Putski Award on this show, I thought.
Sure.
This guy was just jacked.
It looks so cheap for a major company to do this because, okay, you're leading fans to believe it's the Warrior, and maybe some fans actually believed it would
Some
be.
People, I'm sure, bought this pay-per-view thinking the Ultimate Warrior was coming. That's terrible.
So then this music hits, and this guy charges to the ring just like the Warrior, and then clears the ring, crowd goes nuts, then the camera zooms into this man's face, and it is clearly some guy putting on a Ultimate Warrior Halloween costume.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. This was just, WCW could not look more second rate than this.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable. I don't even know how to describe this match. It's such shit. Jimmy Hart comes out midway through the match where he looked like he had stolen the outfit from the Scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz. He had been kidnapped, but he escaped somehow.
They were teasing where Jimmy Hart was this whole time, and I guess this was it. He just shows up in the middle of the match.
He fought off whoever his captor was.
To no effect. Like, now, what's he doing in the match now? There's no pop for his entrance. He didn't do anything in the match.
Hogan wrestles a chair away from Vader in the entranceway, and as he goes to hit Vader with the chair, they cut to a long shot. Hogan hits Vader with three relatively soft chair shots to the head.
These are the lightest chair shots I've ever seen. He must be your favorite wrestler.
Well, it was at least safe. Then Hogan sprinted down the entranceway to hit Vader in the head a fourth time, and they cut away here because this was too violent for WCW. And they are no longer attached by the strap. The babyfaces are outnumbering the heels here. Flair is just lost out here in the shuffle. We see chair shots, the strap is loose, the match is bad. Then they get the strap back on, and Hogan starts touching the post on the outside. So apparently you don't have to hit the turnbuckles. You can hit any four things that are around the ring, and that's fine. Yeah. Renegade gets in the ring, and Flair takes
out. Uncensored, John.
Yeah, it's makes no censored. Renegade gets into the ring, Flair takes a bump for him and then leaves. Then Hogan's on the floor with Vader, again touching the post. Vader throws a punch at Renegade. Renegade completely no-sells it. Then Hogan is splashed and slammed in the ring by Vader before he hulks up, hits his leg drop. Hogan goes to hit all three turnbuckles when a masked man attacks Renegade with a chair. Flair then gets into the ring and hits Hogan with a wooden chair, and Flair and Vader double-team Hogan. Renegade gets back to his feet until Flair attacks him with another chair. Vader touches three turnbuckles, is 1 foot away from touching the fourth and winning the WCW title when Ric Flair stops Vader and insists that they splash Hogan on a chair. Vader hits a somersault off the second rope. Hogan gets out of the way, and Vader takes a bump onto a chair. Flair then pulls Vader out of the ring. Flair attacks Hogan with a chair. Then Hulk does his Hulk up spot and whips Flair with the strap. And then Hogan drags Flair around to all four turnbuckles, and the bell rings.
This is uncensored.
The manager at ringside is considered part of the match, and Hogan is declared the winner for dragging Ric Flair, who is not in this match, around to all four turnbuckles. Then a masked man comes into the ring, stands alongside Flair and Vader, and teases being a heel, but then joins the babyfaces, and it's Randy Savage, after another masked man comes from the entranceway without his hood, and it's Arn Anderson, who's been tied up by the fake masked man, Randy Savage. This made no sense at all. This was the poorest booked main event I can recall reviewing. Holy shit, did this suck. Remember when we reviewed Uncensored 99, that first blood match with Hogan and Flair?
Nope.
Man, did these two have some monumental main events at Uncensored.
Oh, fuck.
This was terrible. I didn't know what was going on. The highlight of the post-match was going to, like, a mini truffle shuffle kid from the Goonies doing a Hogan pose and looked like he was going insane. Zero, negative 500 out of 10 is what I give this show. Every match was bad on this card. Every gimmick was bad. Every storyline progression sucked. I didn't want to see one more match after this. The main event was completely ridiculous, where Hogan still overcame all of these odds when Vader didn't even have to do a job. Flair was just booked like an absolute idiot. This show felt like it was 18 hours long. I could not wait for it to be finished. And I can't believe WCW business picked up a year and a half later, because this product in early 95 was the absolute shits. I hated this show. Yeah. I'm going to enjoy TNA pay-per-views from now on, because I'll have this embedded in a portion of my brain, knowing that it will never hit Uncensored 1995 levels.
Oh, well.
This was the worst start-to-finish pay-per-view I've ever seen. There was nothing good on this show. Nothing even resembling good.
You know what? Yes. And
I don't think there was anything even average, other than an Arn Anderson two-minute promo.
It's Uncensored!
Oh, shut up.
It wasn't even... Usually we watch these shows to laugh at years later. No, they didn't even have that novelty anymore. I just found it annoying because I've seen so many bad pay-per-views now that this was just another one, and this one didn't even really stand out. They were just bad matches, and all I'm thinking is just, oh, another bad WCW pay-per-view. It's just not even ironic anymore.
I thought I was numb to these bad shows, but this showed me I still have emotion when it comes to watching this. This was a painful, painful process, and I will never leave an event this bad till like 3 days before, because
oh fuck,
I needed the whole week to watch this. I could have done a match each night, and this was just terrible. What do you give this show?
Does it matter?
I just want to see how low you'd rank it.
I give it, I don't know, an amoeba. The lowest life form.
Please don't watch this show, everybody. We endured this pain for you. We are the martyrs here that sacrificed ourselves for you to hear this review. And please do not ever watch this show. And I'm only so glad to know that my VHS copy is destroyed. And if you own a copy, I think you should destroy it too and post your pictures on our Facebook group. This is a shit event. This was worse than Heroes of Wrestling, I thought.
Sure.
This was worse than WOW.
You really shouldn't watch this, because it'll ruin wrestling for you. It'll actually, I'm not even joking, it'll make you start to hate professional wrestling and just make you not want to see anything.
Yep.
Make you not want to live.
So on that note, let's go into our feedback for this week, everybody. Because as we mentioned last week, this weekend is the anniversary of the XFL. It launched February the 3rd of 2001, 10 years ago away.
Oh, boy.
So we did get some feedback on people's memories of the XFL. So let's start off with Chris. After the No Way Out 2000 review, you guys asked for some memories of the XFL, so here goes. I watched every game that I could. Since they set the season after the Super Bowl, I was really into the idea of watching more football. However, I believe the failure comes down to one important issue, the quality of the play. The first game was not good. The play was sloppy and gave the impression that you were in fact watching the minor leagues. It got better, but the first week really needed to be better. After the ratings slagged, I remember the selling point of one game was going into the cheerleaders' locker room at halftime. What happened next was akin to a wrestling backstage skit that left you embarrassed to say you watched this. I believe it was the cameraman gets knocked out going into the locker room, and we got to watch his dream. So lame. In the end, it was a failed experiment, but not a downright awful one. No, it was pretty bad, everybody, and that locker room dream sequence during a, like, nationally televised sporting event didn't really click, everybody, and $110 million was lost.
How ridiculous is something like a concept like that when put on a national stage, but we watch it every week without question?
I think there's a different mindset when you watch pro wrestling versus
there is. You're lowering your standards by a whole lot.
I don't agree with that. You have to lower your standards to watch wrestling. I feel that
when I watch these stupid dream sequences.
Okay, in that case, yes. But I'm saying, like, you know, stuff that is more out of the box can fly on a wrestling show and I think succeed. Whereas doing, like, promos or vignettes within a sporting event, it's just different. Like, imagine the UFC did, like, a vignette, you know, where, like...
No, it's ridiculous.
It wouldn't work in that environment. But I thought it was very poorly directed. And I think at that point, like, Dick Ebersol from, like, NBC Sports was heavily involved in this. And he should have stepped in, I think, and edited Vince McMahon a lot more. Like, that shit should have never happened. It was desperation by week 4 or 5, where they were doing all this ridiculous shit with Jesse Ventura feuding with one of the coaches. It was really bad.
Alan Gaynor, I actually found the XFL to be entertaining. Sure, the players weren't as skilled as the ones that you would find in the NFL, but they were all on the same level, so the games were competitive. I think one of the main things they had going against them was their Saturday night time slot on NBC. Even so, I doubt the NHL doesn't get much higher ratings on NBC than the XFL did. WWE lost lots of money on it, but it wasn't nearly as bad of an idea as the World Bodybuilding Federation they started in the early 90s. I do, however, remember one terrible dream sequence video they did during a halftime where Vince McMahon was in the cheerleaders' locker room. Yes.
I don't know if Saturday night necessarily hurt them. They also had, like, Sunday afternoon games on UPN. And, I mean, the UFC has thrived on Saturday nights. And that first week, the first game did over 14 million viewers.
Yes.
So, I mean, there was an interest there. And it wasn't – no one came back. It was like diminishing returns every week thereafter. So, I mean, people gave it a try. And it's not like Saturday night was a death knell for them. There's a birthday party going on as we are doing this.
Yes. Next. Oh, whose birthday?
It's Anthony's.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Should we take a break?
No.
I had no clue it was his birthday.
Yeah, I think it was yesterday.
Oh.
Who's next?
Let's go on to Daily Brennan. Really enjoyed the recent No Way Out and Raw reviews, chaps. Keep it up. As for the XFL, well, I was a fan the first time around when it launched, and I have to say that I was just as confused then as I am now. I really have no idea what it was all about. Being in the UK, we don't have football like you do in North America, so all the promos and the build-up was completely lost on me. Believe me, most football fans are not accustomed to promos and build-up. To this day, I don't know what Vince was trying to achieve. Maybe the lack of international appeal was why it failed. By the way, Matt Stryker marking out. Any thoughts? That's in reference to when Booker T came out and Matt Stryker yelled on the air that, "I'm marking out, bro."
Oh.
And
I don't think anything of it.
Two nights later, he was removed from the SmackDown broadcast team. So maybe that tells you something. I mean, what were your thoughts, Way, on, just in a nutshell, the XFL failing? And was there any way it could have succeeded?
I think it's best
case scenario.
It's an impossible task to go up against the NFL, no matter who you are.
100% agree.
Mm.
There was this big thought from Vince McMahon that football fans are tired. Remember, they call it the No Fun League. They're tired of the NFL. It was like, what stats are backing this theory up for you? The NFL is like so embedded in the American culture. There's no demand for more, an alternative football league. And if there was, you know, the USFL would have taken off. You know what I mean? Or it's just...
I felt like everything about it, everything about the concept, about the idea, just seemed like too much of a gimmick. And nothing seemed like it... Like, what does the X stand for?
They never explained that. It was like the that WXO wrestling promotion.
Or you would assume that it stands for extreme, right?
Sure.
Anything with the word extreme in front of it, spelled with an X. I mean, ECW aside. Anything with the X spelling extreme in front of it is not going to last very long. And also, X Games aside, maybe. But it just – everything about it screams like a fad. And it screams fad, and it just – I'm not surprised in the least that it didn't last more than a year.
And as much as, you know, Vince McMahon being the poster boy for this kind of got attention for it, it wasn't necessarily the right attention from, like, the legit sports media.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a lot of people went into this looking at it as something that's going to be a joke. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what it degenerated into. Whether they wanted to start it out to be a legit football league, it became a joke with all these other gimmicks. And
I do remember something positive coming out of it was that Jim Ross was getting some good reviews as a commentator, as a football commentator. And unfortunately, I mean, obviously he's a huge fan, but he probably will never shake the wrestling stigma if he does want to, ever did want to pursue
Which is really unfortunate because I think that guy could do just about any sport and do well at it. Yeah. I mean, I think he's versed enough that he could go in and do football.
And
he
so
could do
smart.
MMA.
So intelligent.
That was when I did my interview with him. He just told me about, because we talked about that, the wrestling stigma you get. Mm-hmm. And he says that, I don't understand, why can't I do a legitimate sport?
Yeah.
I'm going to work just as hard as anyone else. And
well, honestly, it's for a big portion of that is because wrestling again and again gets embarrassed with things like this. When you try to take a tradition like football and try to inject dream sequences into it.
Yeah. Let's keep going here.
Gunnar War.
Yes.
The XFL was a big deal for me personally. I liked the games because it was after football season, I believe. I was an uneducated 13-year-old at the time and found it oddly annoying that JR was calling the games. It was also my first experience with Jesse Ventura, seeing that I was just really sinking my teeth into wrestling at the time. He did do commentary for some games, didn't he?
Yes, for the whole season.
I had heard somewhere that they had been losing ratings like air out of an inner tube. I think it was something in the 8s, then 6s, then 2s by week 4. I had a New York/New Jersey Hitman shirt. I really wish I kept that thing.
Yes, the XFL merchandise, which oddly enough, every now and then you do see, like just when I'm out, I'll see someone with like some XFL shirt or something.
Austin
would always wear something.
Yeah
he had like all the jerseys.
At that ECW one.
That's right. Ryan Peterson. I thought the XFL was great.
Sorry to cut you off. Remember Weakest Link? When Stephanie had that question about the XFL? She was questioning about who...
Oh, and she got the name of the team
and she actually
wrong.
Got it right.
Oh, she got it right.
She hesitated for a second and she actually got it right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Ryan Peterson. I thought the XFL was great. I found it very entertaining. It was put together as quite a show and I don't really understand why no one cared. I mean, the rules were and are a little quizzical to me. The only thing I seem to recall was the no fair catch rule. I suppose it isn't too much of a surprise it didn't succeed. If you've ever read Sex, Lies, and Headlocks, the real story of Vince McMahon and the WWE, it illustrates several instances where Vince failed at promoting events that weren't wrestling. Also, I'm sure you'll recall the Bodybuilding Federation of the early 90s as well being a flop. I don't know why, but it seems to me that Vince only knows how to run wrestling. So to me, like the Steam Whistle commercials say, do one thing really, really well. And as another cliche goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Anyway, the XFL did do well in promoting certain players to the NFL who may have been overlooked, guys like Tommy Maddox and the He Hate Me guy. The failure is clearly a sensitive subject, as in 2005 when Steve Austin was wearing a Texas Outlaw shirt and Joey Styles said, even I'm not brave enough to comment on the shirt he's wearing. Lastly, pass along to Wei that he was an integral part of the review of No Wei Out with a lot of background information.
Well, thank you, Ryan. You're an integral part of our show today with
thank you.
All this XFL information as
there
well.
There you go. Next one, Wei.
Oh, Jay Hunter. Hey, lads. Was at the TNA Dublin House show last night. Everyone was over and got a loud reaction. Biggest pops were for Flair and Beer Money, who played super babyfaces against heels in Ireland, Magnus and Williams. The crowd were nuts for Flair. It was great to see lots of big-name talent who were touring for the first time with TNA, such as the Hardys, RVD, Anderson, Flair, Pope, Rain, Mickey, etc. I never truly appreciated the size/girth of wrestlers until you see them in person. Even Sabin is much thicker than a normal person. Matt Hardy was in great shape and doesn't deserve the grief he gets. Jarrett cut a fun JBL-style heel promo on Irish Banks and our Tausuch, Brian Cowan. Anderson asked if the crowd were full of arseholes, which got a huge pop. Hardy got tons of abuse, getting Just Say No and CM Punk chants against him. When Jeff Hardy got thrown out of the ring, he landed up against us, holding the steel bars. I told him to get used to it. Uh-huh, that's great. After the match, Anderson got a child in the ring to say his name. Someone threw a bottle of Coke in the ring, which fizzled up. Anderson drank some and said there was no Coke in it, which I shouted, Hardy's got it, which got a good laugh. Matt Morgan went over to my mate who wore a Blueprint t-shirt, yet someone bought that shirt. After the last match, all the face wrestlers and Dixie came out and had a beer in the ring and thanked everyone for coming. All in all, it was a really great show. Shout out to fellow Review Away listener Richard Holm, whom I met at the arena.
Oh, that's excellent.
That's cool.
Listeners meeting each other out in the world. That's great to hear. Robert Otto. Oh, man. I finished watching Uncensored 95 last night. The first three matches were a something kind of special. The martial arts match was probably the worst because it took them 5 minutes just to start. I love that Jim Duggan said, I won't bow to anyone, as he is bowing to the referee. I'm really looking forward to hearing you guys tear this pile of crap apart. It's sad to know that right around the corner, Monday Nitro will be starting and the better days were ahead for WCW.
Hmm. There we go. Jack Pisco. His thoughts on Raw from this past week. Good show with Morrison showing his worth through his in-ring ability. The Rumble is... I think we read this, didn't we?
Oh, did we read it?
Yeah.
Then just skip to the next
one.
Okay.
Patrick Tony. It's not the Chamber match that's the problem. It is the two world titles. Back in the day, the only way to face the world champion at Mania was to win the Rumble. Now, whatever show the Rumble winner doesn't pick, it gives the wrestlers on the opposite show a chance to go to Mania, which negates the purpose of the Rumble. Even if they pulled the Chamber match from the February pay-per-view, WWE would do a 3- or 4-way match to determine who was facing the other world champ at Mania. Once again, the Rumble would have no consequence. To make the Rumble mean more, they need one champ for both shows.
I agree it would make it stronger if you had the one unified champion and he would get the challenger at the Rumble. I completely agree with that. That being said, I'm fine with the way it is where if you had one chamber match where the winner gets the opportunity at the other title, I'm fine with that. But in recent years, we've seen the world champion and WWE champion have to defend their title in a chamber with five other guys apiece, meaning that the Rumble, it's like what me and Wade went on for on Review of Raw this week, that it's like you can lose the Rumble and you get like one to two more chances to go to WrestleMania. And I think it's that where I think one of the reasons a lot of people will get into a major UFC fight, let's pick Junior Dos Santos and Brock Lesnar when they fight. People are going to be so intrigued because the winner of that is going to get a title shot. And conversely, it's going to set the other guy back in his career where a loss is really detrimental to someone. And that's pretty much across the board in the UFC where if you lose a fight, it can really hurt you. And I don't think people get into losses at all in WWE because they're so trivial and that you can come back the next night and maybe even get a title shot after losing. And that's where you just trivialize wins and losses so that even if you don't win the Rumble, it's not the end of the world. You have lots more opportunities. John Cena is not going to win the Rumble, and he's going to close out Mania.
Wins and losses haven't meant much for years.
And that's a giant problem, I think, with why people are maybe hesitant to what am I spending $55 on pay-per-view for matches that are going to be inconsequential 24 hours later?
Yeah.
And this is the season, I think, when people do believe that they at least mean something. You do know that the winner of the Rumble, there is something at stake. But I think it's just, it's been watered down to a degree. Let's keep going here. Patrick writes in, just the thought I had while watching the 2-22-11 promo. That totally could be Sting. And instead of Taker versus Sting this year, they could bring Sting in now, have a good WrestleMania match, and build the feud until WrestleMania of next year while keeping Taker healthy and reduce his schedule. Could be a streak versus career match, and with a good long build as well as establishing Sting as an icon to the newer fans, this could be awesome. That would be a lot better than throwing this together in a short amount of time. I think Barrett versus Taker this year could be okay, and next year would be the big one. Sting versus Taker. Taker goes 20-0. I disagree. I think you go to that match right away. I think a year of Sting really takes the shine off, and I think it would be less important next year after seeing a year of Sting than doing it now. Now it's a hot match to do.
Is Taker still injured, though? What's the story?
They're of the belief that he's going to be doing WrestleMania, but you don't know. It was a serious shoulder surgery he had, but... They're planning, as of right now, he'll be there. But I think this year, if you've got Sting, you do it this year. I don't have the interest.
Oh, I agree, especially with Atlanta.
Yes.
That would be nuts for him.
I think you can do it now. And I think even if he comes in February 21st, you have 6 strong weeks to build that match up. And I think that's enough.
And I really don't think you can book a year in advance anymore. Many things change. You never know.
You don't even know what Taker's health is going to be like next year. That's a banking on a lot. Exactly. Sting's 51. Mm-hmm.
Kevin Lucas, hi John Highway. I just watched a video of a match between Jushin Liger and Samoa Joe from Bound for Glory in 2005, and I found myself agreeing with the first comment on the video. It reads, TNA 2005, awesome. TNA 2010, fucking idiotic. Idiotic.
That's not a word.
I-D-O-I-T-I-C-T.
But we know what the person means.
How can a wrestling company go from Jushin Liger versus Samoa Joe to Immortal versus the main event Mafia in 5 short years?
Well, they haven't.
They haven't.
They didn't go
to that. They've gone to Immortal versus Immortal.
Yes. Interfeud. Aram Nasrallah. Hey, John and Wei. Hope you've enjoyed 2011 so far. Have you enjoyed this year so far?
Fine. Yeah, it's been really good. Just blended into the last year.
Yep.
Not that big weird. Yeah, it's been good.
I've been listening to your Byte Radio podcast as well. Way you should be on each time. My favorite line of 2010 and properly 2011 is each time Way says awful, awful, just awful. Usually it happens to do with something involving R-Truth. Since we are nearing the 10-year anniversary of the last WCW pay-per-view, why not review Sin Super Brawl or the last pay-per-view Greed in 2001? And is there any Canadian movie or TV show worth watching? No Canadian-produced shows come to Danish television since I guess nobody knows there are any shows. Or do you have Canadian versions of CSI and so on?
We do not have Canadian versions of CSI. We have Canadian versions of... every shitty reality show you can think of. We have Canadian Idol. We have So You Think You Can Dance Canada. What other garbage? But I don't know. What Canadian shows do you watch?
I don't watch any Canadian shows,
really?
Actually.
I watch
the MMA show on The Score. I watch some Fight Network programming.
The last real Canadian... You know, there are a lot of them, actually, now that I think about it. But obviously, this is an older show. But Trailer Park Boys is good. If you want to dig up some DVDs, you can go ahead. Kenny vs. Spenny is another good Canadian-produced show that I really enjoy. And that's it.
That's it. And finally... this one's yours.
Oh. Finally, from Jeremy Dergana... Keep up the great work on your show. Your analysis of pro wrestling and MMA is extensive, critical, and most importantly, entertaining. I am a teacher who runs an extracurricular club at my school called the Turnbuckle Club. The Turnbuckle Club is devoted to a thorough examination of sports entertainment through literacy. In addition to my own knowledge and research, we have used ideas, points, and arguments from your podcast to take students on a critical journey of sports entertainment. Wow, amazing. Our club is related to various strands of the Ontario language curriculum, such as oral communication, reading, and media literacy. I just laugh thinking about this guy, you Jeremy, telling whatever board of educators your reasons for watching pro wrestling, your reasons for watching the King of the Road match from Uncensored 1995 in school. The club is engaging and encourages children to read and research on a topic that they enjoy. We discuss the following topics: globalization of wrestling, revenue slash economics, market share slash ratings, demographics, capitalism, motives behind selecting a champion, what's more important, athleticism or verbal skills, revenue power, T-charts, where we compare the body type of past superstars to the stars of today, idiolects, parodies, gender roles, ideologies of Roland Barthes, wrestling tragedies, and television production value. Our club has risen in popularity to the point that we had Gary Davis, VP of Global Affairs, present us with Raw tickets. We also had Cineplex Colossus provide passes to a pay-per-view event. In conclusion, I would like to say that your podcasts are excellent and informative. If you ever need a teacher to drop by, don't hesitate to call. Don't worry, I have broadcast experience, and no, I will not be a Matt Stryker copycat. By the way, I miss the good old O'Grady's days when my brother and I would clean out the trivia contest you guys used to hold.
Well, there we go. That's a very interesting email.
The Turnbuckle Club.
I would have joined that in high school.
Oh, man.
I had nothing in high school to join. We had a... Man, what was I a part of in high school that I did? Like, I did like sports and stuff, like rugby. But in terms of... I was in some group. Oh, I can't remember what it was called.
I was in a trivia club.
School Reach. School Reach.
Or Reach for the Top.
Yeah. I was familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I joined that. I was in some like student mentoring program.
No, were you?
Where you're paired with like a kid in grade 9 or something like that.
Hmm.
Can't remember that much about it.
But this is a really cool idea, and I really applaud you for promoting pro wrestling in an intelligent light. I mean, like we talked about with the XFL, like when a lot of us tell people that we watch wrestling, the reaction that I'm sure we all get is, how can you watch that? How can you watch that stupid kid show? But the only thing that keeps us interested is the fact that we can watch and analyze this show like adults. And if we do that, there's just so much depth there, as we all know. There's so much intelligent discussion to be had.
That's the thing. It's like pro wrestling is like any other entertainment industry that can be analyzed very critically.
It's so much better in many ways because it's so unique and so weird and changes week to week.
Yeah, it's unfortunately pro wrestling just has such a terrible image to the general public. And I mean, I can't even necessarily blame people for perceiving wrestling that way. When you tune in and you'll see ridiculous stuff like mm-hmm. the Kiss My Ass Club or just stupid segments that you just feel embarrassed to be watching. I mean, we've all had those moments where we're watching with a non-fan and something ridiculous like the necrophilia angle occurs and you're just so embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. So that's kind of just the image pro wrestling has. But I think absolutely. I think we're all kind of understand how wrestling can be analyzed and take a lot from it. So not to get too deep onto things here. But thanks very much for all of your feedback. And you guys can leave your own at reviewaway.com. Just type in Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away Facebook group as we try to continue to increase our numbers. We're shooting for 1,500. So spam some people. Log in anonymously.
We should have a goal by Mania.
We should. Do you want to set that goal?
We're at about 1,300 something. 1,300 something, I think.
What do you think is a realistic number, Wei?
Well.
Or unrealistic?
I'd say 1,500.
1,500 by WrestleMania?
Actually.
I think we could do better than that.
Yeah.
Let's say 1,800.
1,800?
1,800.
500 members in the span of.
Yeah.
About a month and a half.
The race for 500. We've got more than a month and a half. We've got 2 months.
That's a good goal.
It's actually, from the day we're recording this, it's 2 months from today.
Good. Okay, well, that's a very solid goal. 500 members, it's almost like three times what we have.
So tell your wife, tell your kids.
Times, whatever.
Review away, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to need your help, so please help us.
Yep. So next week, Wei, you are in charge of helping us recover from this uncensored event.
Uh-huh.
So what do you have planned for next week to review?
Well, to recover from this awful pay-per-view, I would like to choose another pay-per-view from the famed WCW group. As Aram suggests, it is coming up to the 10-year anniversary of the death of WCW, and so I would like to take a look at their last pay-per-view, Greed, as he suggests, from 2001.
2001, the final WCW pay-per-view ever. So we'll take a look at that show, everybody. And this was a... Man, it was a depressing time for
wrestling. Have we reviewed this one already?
No,
we haven't.
We didn't do Greed.
Good. I just can't keep track anymore.
All right. And going out, everybody, everyone is excited about the potential debut of Sting in the WWE. So I thought we'd go out with something from Sting, the musician, as we count down to 2:21:11, and invariably everyone will be disappointed with whatever it is. So let's let some Sting take us out here. And then next week, we will be reviewing Greed. And we'll chat with you on Tuesday for Review of Raw.
Beaten up, they've been tied up, we'd had chairs, semis,